Hare Krishna, welcome to Jagannath Mandir. Here is the temple president, Akinchina Krishna Prabhupada. Ты скажешь что-нибудь, да, позже? Yeah, he will speak a few words after I speak a little bit. Maybe you can take that one. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vidham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Valita Shri Vishakha Vidhamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kaupa Darubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Ajanu Vandita Bhujokana Kavadata Sankirtanaya Kapitaro Kamalaya Daksha Vishvambaro Dvijavaro Yugadharma Palavandai Jagat Priyakaro Karunavataro Aradhya Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayastad Dhamma Vrindava Namranyaka Chitupasana Vrajavadu Vargyanaya Kaupitam Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumartam Aham Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhur Matamidam Tatra Dharuna Paraham Yantak Pravishya Mama Vachim Imam Prasuktam Sanjeevaya Tekila Shakti Darakshadhamna Aniyam Shahasta Charana Shravana Dvagadim Prananda Mabhagavate Purushaya Tulubhya Hare Krishna. So, first of all, I would like to thank you all for coming. Again, to thank you for coming to Moscow. We are very happy that you came. I was very delighted when I found out that you are coming. And I hope that Russian devotees are serving you nicely. But in the Prema Mataji, she was very in anxiety for many months how to arrange your program and how to help you all. That's the first thing which I wanted to tell you. Second, I wanted to ask you, how did you like it here?
Beyond our expectation, the hospitality, the service.
Yeah. There is something in common between Indian people and Russian people. Once I was talking with Bhaktivedya Purnaswami, and he gave a very peculiar characteristic of Russian, Indian, and Western people. He said, Indian people are irrational and subtle. Western people are rational and gross, and Russian people are irrational and gross. Or something like this. Oh, no, he said sentimental or something. It doesn't matter. But there is definitely something in common. Although Russian people are not so subtle. That's for sure. Sometimes they can be subtle too. So Sri Vallabha Prabhu asked me to speak a little bit about the history of this yatra and about Srila Prabhupada and his visit. I don't know how much you heard about this. Have you heard anything about this? Oh, somebody told you already? No? Oh, you just heard it from different corners. Okay, so now you will hear from authoritative source. From the bona fide. Anyway. As you know, Prabhupada came here only once and he stayed only 5 days in Moscow. It was in 1971, so a few years back we celebrated 40th anniversary of Prabhupada's visit to Moscow. But before that, Prabhupada always wanted to come to Moscow. And at that time, of course, Russia was the main part of the Soviet Union, and Soviet Union was very much closed country. Even the new generation doesn't understand how it was here, what to speak about people from the outside world. It was a very interesting country. It was a nice country in one sense. People were quite pious and idealistic, and there were many good qualities in this country, but there was one very bad quality. God was not allowed. God was forbidden. He was banned from the Soviet Union. He was illegal here. He didn't have any residence permit in the Soviet Union. You know, it was taken to the extreme. You probably don't know so much of Russian history, but in the 30s, in the years 1930s, Stalin, who was the ruler of the Soviet Union at that time, he said, by the year 1940, there will be not a single priest in this country. Not a single priest. He wanted to eradicate the faith in God completely, totally, without any trace of it. It's interesting because he didn't graduate, but he was supposed to be a priest. He was studying as a Christian priest, but he never was, of course, never was ordained, and somehow or other, human psychology, he became the arch enemy of any sort of religiosity. At one point he realized that it's not going to happen, and that he cannot do this. He changed his policy, so the religion was allowed, but in a very limited ways, and usually only old people were allowed to practice religion. If you are old, it's okay. You are anyway useless. But if you are young and you practice religion, God forbid. I don't know if you can say this, God forbid to practice religion. But it was not really something which was acceptable to Russian authorities. I remember very clearly when I was a student, I was studying here in Moscow State University in the chemical department. It happened that in our chemical department, one student, we were in the year three of our studies, one student, we were all supposed to pass the scientific atheism, and we were supposed to swear that there's no God. And I remember very clearly when I was 6 years old, I was going to my kindergarten and I was told that there's no God. And my grandmother, she happened to believe in God. And I was, as a six-year-old kid, I was preaching to her that there's no God because Gagarin, he went to space and he didn't see God. So that wasn't good enough proof that he doesn't exist. So, one student in our department, he admitted openly during this exam on scientific atheism that he believes in God. You know, that the whole university, absolutely, the whole university was upside down. It was a scandal. You know, this man, this poor man, he was taken from, basically, from department to department, just almost in a cage. Like people go, not literally, but almost like this, you know, like people go to zoo and see in the wild animals. In the same way, people were looking at somebody who believes in God. And they couldn't believe their eyes. It was more amazing than to see an elephant or something like this. It was more, it was definitely much more rare. You know, somebody who is young, who is intelligent and believes in God. It was unheard of. He was kicked out from the university. But before he was kicked out, he gave me a gospel. And at that time you couldn't buy any religious literature. It was not possible. So I read it and it really moved my heart. I really felt at that time there's something to it, but I didn't know what is there to it. And only 5 years later I encountered with Bhagavad Gita, and that's how I became a devotee. So why I'm telling this, for you to understand what Prabhupada was coming for. He came to a country where he couldn't speak about God. He was hoping to speak in front of the university students, and I'm sure he would give a very convincing lecture, but nobody would allow him to do this. He had this hope. He was in a letter exchange with one Indology professor from the Oriental Studies, Institute of Oriental Studies of Academy of Science. He was really hoping that this man will arrange some programs for him. But this man said, no. So ultimately, the only thing which Prabhupada could do here while he was here, he was taken on sightseeing, but, you know, Prabhupada, he was not very impressed. he was not coming for this. He wanted to speak with the people. So he came with two servants, Yamasundara and Naravind Prabhu, and ultimately they had a private meeting with this Indology professor, which was recorded. It was recorded secretly by Yamasundara Prabhu. This Indology professor was in big trouble when devotees published this conversation about Varnashrama. And Prabhupada, later when he, you know, came out from Russia, he would often mention in the lectures that I was speaking with big, big professor and he doesn't believe in God, you know, and he was so amazed, you know. Supposed to be intelligent man, and he speaks that there's no soul, there's nothing, and this and that. Anyways, so this is published in The Science of Self-Realization, this conversation, and Prabhupada was not impressed, and really he was kind of bored. Satsvarupa Maharaj describes it not very accurately in his Lilamrita, but to a certain extent he gives an idea. Prabhupada was walking, and there were a few interesting episodes. Supposedly once Prabhupada saw some military men marching in the streets of Moscow, and which at that time was not uncommon. It was quite common scene. And Prabhupada looked and he said to Shyama Sundar Prabhu, to his servant, he said, they are keeping this country artificially under the force. And this will not last maximum 20 years. It was in 1971. In 1991, sharp, Russian Soviet Union was dissolved. Prabhupada made this prediction, you know, and it is said that a devotee of the Lord, if he says something, becomes satya sankalpa. Whatever he says comes true. And there was another interesting prediction which Prabhupada made. Perhaps you were there in the Moscow University, in the hills.
Yeah.
He was looking down in the Moscow. You know, you can see the whole Moscow. And at that time, exactly at that place, he said, there will be thousands of devotees who will dance and chant in this city. So, and in 1993, there was a big concert which devotees arranged, and there was 30,000 people who came to this concert, and they were all chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. But of course, at the time of Prabhupada's visit, hardly anything was there. Shyama Sundar Prabhu tells that once he was standing in a queue, and you know, Shyama Sundar Prabhu was wearing dhoti, and he was quite noticeable, quite peculiar, was, you know, coming out very clearly. And he was standing in the queue to buy some, you know, food stuff, and somebody told him, you know, can you arrange a meeting with your spiritual master for me? And Shyama Sundar Prabhu was very delighted. He thought, Prabhupada loves to preach and somebody just comes to me and wants to approach. And he came to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, somebody wants to meet with you. Prabhupada says, I will not meet with him. This is from KGB, from intelligence. You know, Prabhupada was so sharp. He was very clear. He couldn't really, you know, be fooled. As Prabhupada himself says, I am a Calcutta boy. I'm very experienced in all these dealings. But, you know, as you probably know, he met this one Russian boy who was not particularly interested in this, but he became interested just by meeting with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was very impressed. And he also said at that time that, you know, just by taking one grain of rice from the pot, you can see whether the whole pot is ready or not, whether it's already prepared or not. In the same way, this whole country, just by this one man, you can see that this whole country is ready to take Krishna consciousness. And what happened after that, the preaching started, and it started underground, you know, from mouth to mouth, from the, you know, from the different channels. People would come and they started distributing books, you know, translated some of Prabhupada's books into Russian. And in the beginning, there was not even books, but people were so ready, you know, there was some thirst in people. They really wanted to know what is the meaning of life, what the life is all about. And the first disciple of Prabhupada, he became first officially initiated disciple, Ananta Shanti Das. He would preach in a very special way. He would not waste his time. While standing in a bus stop before, you know, waiting for a bus, he would ask somebody who is there in the bus stop, are you already chanting mantra? And nobody heard what is mantra. And, you know, but at that time, he knew very well Russian psychology, because at that time, Russian psychology was very special because practically there was shortage of everything. You know, if There was shortage of foodstuff, there was shortage of, cloth. Everything was very kind of limited, and people were, if they heard something new, they would just jump on it. And he would ask, you already chant mantra? People said, no, we don't chant mantra. He said, how come? All my friends are already chanting. They said, oh, really? So we should also chant. Tell us, what is it? And it worked. In many cases, it worked. It was a very interesting time. I was there part of this time. I met with devotees. Actually, my friend Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he came here in 76 and 77, twice during Prabhupada's time. And Prabhupada personally told him, you should preach in Russia. Because he knew, you probably all know Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he is a very diplomatic person. Very, in the best sense of the word. I know how he's careful, very tactful, and at the same time, very, convinced and decisive. He's an amazing person with such a strong determination, but at the same time, very, very diplomatic. So Prabhupada, he basically, he took his best man and said to him, you should preach in Russia. Because he knew it will be difficult. He knew it will be so many. And Gopal Krishna Maharaj came with Bhaktivedanta Book Trust stall here in Russia, and they gave books for free to some devotees. And of course, nobody knew English at that time. Just very few people knew English. Even now, not many people know English. If you approach anyone in the street, of course, the young generation, many people know, but during Soviet time, nobody knew English. Hardly anyone. So only very intelligent people who were somewhat connected with whatever. So they gave the first books, and books started distributed. The devotees started distributing these books, and it's amazing. I will tell you a few stories from that time. How Russian people would react. I know personally one devotee who is still a devotee 40 years later. He became a devotee not just by reading Prabhupada's books. He was somewhere in a village far away from here, was doing something, some work, and one of his friends came and somebody gave him book, little book translated into Russian with Prabhupada's picture on the cover. So this man, how he became a devotee, he just saw this book and he saw Prabhupada's picture. And he immediately bowed down and he said, I can't believe that such a man lives in this earth. He was so impressed just by looking at Prabhupada. And he became a devotee just right there on the spot. And when he read, he told me his story. He read the book, just one book, horribly translated with Prabhupada's picture. He was so convinced. He had four children and wife. And the day he read the book, he said, from now on we became vegetarians. And because he didn't know what vegetarians means, really, he said, no milk, no even butter, nothing. We just eat vegetables and fruits. And, some sunflower oil or whatever was there, and for almost 1 year, his whole family was, completely tortured, following this very, and when he met with devotees and realized that butter is allowed, he was shocked, he couldn't believe it, he was so strong. You know, of course, that's another characteristic of Russian people. They tend to be somewhat fanatical, you know. But to live in Russia and survive, you need to be a little fanatical. It's a prerequisite. It's a requirement. You have to be not really fanatical. You have to be tough. You know, you need to be certain qualities are required to survive here. Some other stories from that time, devotees were so strict because they didn't really have encounter with those who practice. Their only connection was Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books, and sometimes, very rarely, some Prabhupada's disciples would come here with a secret mission, stay a couple of days. Like Indradyumna Maharaj came, and he came in a wig. You know, he was very, very much undercovered. So there was no... and it's still, to a certain extent, a problem. People, they would have a very bookish knowledge about what culture is. They knew the philosophy to a certain extent. But they don't know what culture is and what is really allowed, what is not. So they were mixing different things. Like, I remember very clearly when I came to one flat where early devotees would lived at that time. I came to a bathroom and there was, of course, you know, cold water tap and hot water tap. And it was written there, on a hot water tap, it was written there with big letters, Maya. Basically means you're not allowed to use hot water, only use cold water. If you're using hot water, you are in Maya, you're hopeless. you can't really practice anything. So that was some things. Very soon, in 1980, I became a devotee. And practically in the same year, in 1981, at the end of 1980, the intelligence service of Russian state started a campaign against devotees. Although at that time there was probably hardly 100 people all over Soviet Union, not more than this. But they were really worried. There was a special department created in the intelligence service, and they came to me and they wanted to somehow or other to make me their agent, because they thought that I'm sufficiently materially attached to be their agent. I was doing my postgraduate studies at that time and doing some PhD thesis working, and they threatened me, "We put you in prison." And they did put in prison 60 people. They didn't put in prison me, but they wanted, but somehow it didn't work. Krishna somehow protected around 60 people, and 3 people died in labor camps and especially in psychiatric hospitals. It was a very sad story. People were tortured in the prisons, but they were even more tortured in psychiatric hospitals. They were literally going crazy. Because, they were doing all kinds of injections. And they were really amazed. Actually, some of the doctors in these psychiatric hospitals, they became devotees because they saw how devotees were immune to their treatments. Their treatments were so severe, the tortures were so severe that people would go crazy very, very quickly. But devotees somehow or other, they maintained sanity. But still, you know, some were affected, unfortunately, to a certain degree. But because they were chanting, and you know, they commanded some respect because devotees were so strict even in these prisons and labor camps. They were following four regulative principles. They wouldn't eat. You know, there was hardly anything to eat, but they would just take few pieces of bread every day. Perhaps you read this book, Salted Bread. Yeah. So some stories are there from that time. You know, and the Sachisutta, who is the hero of this book, he died in a labor camp. What happened then? You know, Perestroika came and the new era of Russian history came according to the prediction of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, not only this, but, you know, in 1988, our society was registered officially in Moscow. I think in 1986 there was Indian Festival of Indian Culture in Moscow. So that was the first Harinams. Because it was already kind of perestroika, and devotees would come out on the street, and when people asked, "What are you doing?" They would say, "This is in Festival of Indian Culture. So we're performing." Indian culture. So that was 86, 88. It was registered, and then there was a very, you know, also interesting time of explosion, Hare Krishna explosion in Russia. Of course, it was not only Hare Krishna explosion. So many different groups exploded at that time. All kinds of religious groups came here, Mormons. So it's not that we were unique, but we were unique in one sense because we were very noticeable. We're still very noticeable, you know, you can see. And people know us. You know, it's not uncommon that, you know, people even see you in a plain clothes and they say Hare Krishna. They somehow or other they know how to recognize devotees. And recently I was flying, and I was also sometimes I fly in the plain clothes. So I was in the plain clothes. I sat in the plane, and next to me was one lady. She was a sportswoman, you know, very strongly built lady, young lady. She looked at me, looked very careful, and then said, "Oh, Goswami Maharaj, Hare Krishna." I don't know how she knew it. She's just completely, you know. And many people, you know, like we have preachers now who are, you know, outreach people who are preaching to wide audiences of Russian people through Ayurveda, through yoga, through different ways, and philosophy also. So we have few of these big preachers, and for example, one of them, he has mailing list for 200,000 who just want to regularly, whatever he says, they will just, you know, 200,000 people, which is big because, you know, that's a big number of people. And so many people through his preaching became devotees. Basically, most of the people became devotees by hearing him or by listening his lectures or by practicing something, you know, him. So it's still amazing country in the sense that if you go anywhere in the West, most of the population of Hare Krishna centers and temples and ISKCON temples are Indians, Indian congregation living in this country. Whether it's America or Britain, you will see a few white faces. It's not like this here. We have very few Indians and plenty of Russians. Every Janmashtami we have few thousand people coming, 5,000, between 5,000 and 10,000. And, you know, 95% of this Russian. You know, so they're coming here and they're really, you know, Russian people are very nice, kind-hearted, very pure-hearted, I would say. Of course, the Western propaganda is strongly destroying the innocence. Prabhupada used to say this, and this is actually our philosophy. What is the distinguishing feature? Why some people accept Krishna consciousness, others not? Actually, this is Jiva Goswami's point. He says that there are some people who are too much crooked. Kutilata. This kutilata, crookedness, cleverness, is the main impediment. You know, many people may meet a pure devotee. Some people will develop faith, other people will not. Why? This is the only distinguishing feature. The receptiveness to kind of get to develop this faith is this straightforwardness or simplicity. Saralata, Arjavam, whatever you call it, many different names are there in Sanskrit. And if you're opposite to this, if you're crooked, clever, then it's very difficult. It's actually, Jiva Goswami says that those people who are crooked, they have no hope. They really have no hope. Durvidagda. It's very difficult to sparkle faith in them. So what is good about Russian people, that's at least my analysis of why Russian people are so receptive, because they are not only receptive here in Russia, they are receptive all over the world. If you go travel in countries, you will see in ISKCON temples, you will see the huge Indian population of devotees, and you will see a lot of Russians. You know, whether it's America or, you know, like when I come to America, some 150 Russian people come to my programs. When I go to England, to Great Britain, there is a congregation of, in London alone, there is a congregation of 80 Russian-speaking devotees in London. And I don't know how many, maybe, I don't know, British people, 10 maybe, I don't know. Not many, really not many. So, because of the history and other, you know, other circumstances, Russian people are, many Russian people are simple. The simplicity is there. Simplicity which makes people receptive to develop Shraddha. You know, we all know that the qualification to become a devotee is to develop Shraddha. Shraddha is the main, Shraddha in Krishna Katha. So, and to develop this faith, you need simplicity. Because if you are clever and crooked, you will not believe it. It's too simple. Russian people, they are special in this sense, and still there are so many people who are coming. It's amazing. We have festivals, 5,000 people come for this festival, and you know, so many people, so many new people are always constantly coming and coming and coming and coming. So it's, as I said, in early 90s, the Hare Krishna explosion started, but the most amazing thing is that it's still going on. It's a very long explosion. Usually explosion, you know, takes a few short seconds. This explosion goes on for 25 years already in a row. And And therefore, it's kind of nice to be here, although it's difficult. It's a tough place. It's a very difficult place. There are so many impediments and so many, you know. Once Prabhupada, somebody told him that there is a chance Prabhupada to go to Moscow, and it was winter time. And winters are severe here. If you really want to know what Russia is like, you should come in January, not in July. You will have the full taste of what is it. And somebody said, Prabhupada, there is a chance to go to Moscow in January. And he was in Hawaii at that time. And it was mango season in Hawaii. And somebody said, and Prabhupada immediately said, I'm going to Moscow. So Prabhupada said, the disciple said, Prabhupada, it's mango season. Prabhupada said, preaching in the snows of Moscow is sweeter than the sweetest mango in Hawaii. that was his kind of attitude. And because he knew what the sweetness is. The sweetness is to speak about Krishna. And especially if you have grateful ears to hear about Krishna, that's very sweet. To speak about Krishna is sweet in itself. If there are some grateful ears, it's 100 times sweeter, 1,000 times sweeter. If people are receptive, if they are kind of moved by the preaching, then it's very sweet. Therefore, in my opinion, it's the best country in the world. And I hardly travel anywhere. I was in Dubai just a couple of times, just to see how it's like. Sometimes I go to England, but I don't go anywhere. There are enough people here and enough work to do. There is another side of the sweetness. I mean, there is another contributing factor to this sweetness. One is the people are receptive. Another one, it's so difficult here, and that's why it's so sweet. It's extremely difficult. There are impediments practically on every step. I will tell you very briefly the dramatic history of this Moscow Yatra. You know, we in the 90s, we got a governmental building. We started the first temple. Then in 2004, we were kicked out from this building, and in exchange of a land, Moscow government made a gesture. We will give you a land and you will build your temple. And, you know, at that time, we knew that it's not going to be easy if it will happen at all. It's not that we were naive, but we didn't have anything else to do. You know, we were... at that time, there were already hundreds and hundreds of people. And we were kicked out from the only building which was there. And for 10 years, we were there on the land which the government gave us. Within 1 year, they reversed their decision, and they gave the land, and they reversed the decision. So for 1 year we were legally on this land, and for 9 years we were illegally on this land. But still, they gave some other land in exchange far away, and we're still going on. And we, you know, we got so many different, you know, I don't know how many. We got probably that many governmental papers, you know, in the files, if you put together 275 permissions from different governmental authorities, this and that. We were practically ready to start. Everything was ready. And then at the last moment they said, no, we changed our mind. We invested $2 million into this project. Huge, huge work, everything. You know, so many hopes were there. I was coming to Dubai, explaining. Last moment it was changed. In 2014, practically 1st of April, whatever. But anyway, so what we did, we bought a big plot of land, and we were planning, we're going very carefully about this. So we're going to do something, because we're still in a rented place. This is a rented place. We are semi-legal here. The place where you were on Sunday, it's also a rented place. So there is a huge potential, but there is practically, you know, it's not easy. So we bought the land. We will build something on the land, something rather small, but gradually trying to develop into an educational center. And we want to buy a building in Moscow. So that's our plans, to buy a building. Because when we buy a building and it's our own, then we can be more or less safe. And you will go to St. Petersburg. There is a beautiful yatra there. Hundreds and hundreds of people, very nice mood. They also have rented place, but much bigger rented place than we have. And it's a beautiful city. You will go to Kazan. Kazan also, you will see the temple. It's a small temple, but it's a nice temple which belongs to ISKCON. Not so small, but it's a good-sized temple. They are trying to enlarge it. You will go to Yaroslav. There's also a temple there. And Vladimir. It's a very small place there. But as Prabhupada said, temple is not the bricks, not the cement, not the stones. Temple is the people and the heart of the people. Ultimately, you have to have temple in your heart. So, and I really hope that you will have very good time there. And you will enjoy different moods of Russian people, and you know, the different emotions, and exchange something. And please come again. We will always be happy to receive you. So we distribute books. Rajar and Prabhu, you want to speak something about this? Okay. We have three brahmacharya ashrams. In this brahmacharya ashram, there is around 20 brahmacharis live. We have some educational ashram outside of Moscow. There is about 50 people live there. We have book distribution ashram on the new land which we bought. So there is around 40, 45 people there. So altogether, we have around more than 100 brahmacharis in Moscow alone. So we all know that brahmacharis are, you know, there are some brahmacharis in India, of course, but outside of India, it's not so many, so Russia. You know, it's an extinct species of life, brahmacharis, almost. So we carefully protect them and try to facilitate their service. We distribute many books. We distributed probably around 15 million of Prabhupada's books today in Russia. So it basically means that every tenth person in Russia has Prabhupada's books. At least 10% of the, if not more. So. And these books, as we know, they are sitting there for the time being. At one point, they will explode. We have one devotee. He's a bank manager. He's a manager of a big bank, you know, one of the directors of a bank. So because of his job, he had a lot of anxieties, and at one point, he developed insomnia. He couldn't sleep at night. So he told me his story, how he joined. He couldn't sleep, and he was going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And he was, and ultimately he came to a bookshelf, and he saw a book which he somehow or other, he just, his eyes somehow or other were there in the book, and it was Signs of Self-Realization. So the whole night he read the whole book. And next morning he became a devotee. So that's how how insomnia made him a devotee. So these books are there, some people read it, some people don't read it, but sooner or later they will do something. Okay, if you have any questions, otherwise Akinchin Krishna Prabhu, the temple president, can also say a few words. Yes.
So, in the two main people, one of the pastor,
Sachisuta, Sarvabhauma, who wrote.
He's now in US.
He's in Sweden. In US? He moved to Sweden, as far as I know. He's from Armenia, yeah. He moved, yeah.
There was another person, Sannyas Das.
Sannyas Das, yeah. He's in St. Petersburg.
Any particular episodes that we need to know closer to the perestroika period, like Gorbachev and, you know, the campaign that you did, anything that we need to know about?
There's many episodes. When Gorbachev came to power and he kind of gradually started introducing some freedom, at that time, actually, even in 86, when it was already perestroika, devotees were put in prison still in 86. I was personally threatened to be put in prison in 86, another time. Things made difference. Kirtiraj Prabhu, who was in charge of Russian mission in ISKCON at that time, he was GBC member, Prabhupada's disciple, under Harikesh Maharaj. So he was doing the campaign all over the world. There were demonstrations, and one lady from Sweden, she was on a hunger strike in front of Russian embassy. She Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Mai Ki Jai. And few episodes were interesting. One was little Prahlad. Sri Prahlad, the famous Kirtaniya, who is from Australia. At that time he was a little boy, and he chanted a special song. Australian devotees wrote a special song, Mr. Gorbachev, Free My Friends. So the devotees, they recorded this, little Prahlad very nicely chanted this song, and they presented this song to the Prime Minister of Australia. And the Prime Minister of Australia, he was so moved by listening this song and listening the whole story. Devotees came to him, explained to him what is going on. So he personally called Gorbachev. And he started pleading. He said, they're nice people, they're very nicely contributing here, please do something about it. And practically immediately, some relief started, and the devotees were gradually released. That was one interesting episode. Another one was Ronald Reagan, at that time the president of United States, came to Moscow. And when he came to Moscow with his wife, Nancy Reagan, they met with one lady devotee whose husband was in prison. He developed tuberculosis, and he was practically on the verge of death at that time in the prison. So his wife told Nancy, she didn't meet with Ronald Reagan, but she met with Nancy Reagan. And she was also very moved. And they also spoke with Gorbachev, and basically this all had an effect, and devotees were released because of this. And there were so many other things, so many. It was a very interesting time, wild time. Because all of a sudden in 90s, from complete total control, state control over everything, every minute affairs were controlled by the government. Everything was so standardized. Everyone was really, you know. And then just within a couple of years, everything was allowed. So people, they went wild. It was wild. And, you know, Hare Krishna was one of the things which was allowed after so many years of complete ban on Hare Krishna. So devotees were jumping on the streets. And, you know, at that time, people, they were so thirsty. For 70 years, they were, you know, they wanted something new and something fresh. And then all of a sudden this. And they were, you know, Hare Krishna were practically on the level of popularity with McDonald's. McDonald's was very popular and Hare Krishna almost as popular as McDonald's, because it was something really new, some kind of fresh air came into a very stuffy atmosphere of that time country. Any other questions? Yeah. Every day we have, I think, seven Sankirtan groups, Nagar Sankirtan groups. So some of them go once a week, some of them go twice or three times a week, so in different locales of the city. So every group has, you know, 20 people going on the street. So probably, you know, some Sankirtan is going on now somewhere in the city. Every day we have very strong program. We have a special devotee in charge of it, and he really inspired and organized many, many, many people who are really love street chanting. Although it's not 100% legal, but there was one Russian writer, long back, and probably 200 years back. He said that Russian laws are very strict, but the strictness of Russian laws was always softened by the fact that nobody is supposed to follow them. Nobody is, that they're not really kind of enforced. The laws are very strict, but enforcement is very weak. So that's how it is. And it creates a certain advantages to everyone, and everyone takes the advantages. But if need is there, the law is enforced in a very, you know, complete way. But if need is not there, you know, you can do something. But it's still kind of not really allowed, but nobody cares so much. But anyway, there's always some loopholes.
How was it maintained during that period?
Well, it was totally underground. Devotees were just meeting in different flats, and it was dangerous because very often all these flats where devotees live, they would be watched by the agents, and oftentimes when there was a big gathering, like, you know, big gathering at that time, 30, 40, 20 people maybe, you know, the secret police would come and arrest everyone and put temporarily in prison or just, you know, threaten. It was practically a daily event. At that time, I remember very clearly, we would meet, and before we would meet, we would just, you know, look around, we would go this way and that way, and, you know, we would knock on the door, and, you know, somebody would ask, who is that? And we were supposed to say something, you know, some password to be allowed to enter. And, you know, but it was a very sweet time. Everyone was was a lot of adrenaline in the blood. Everything was very dangerous. And when we were distributing books, it was also very dangerous. But it was coming from friend to friend, from, you know, through the way, from mouth to mouth, somehow or other. It was very interesting time. I love this time. I wouldn't like it to repeat in my life. But it was interesting. Government is, I would say, fair to a certain extent. At least, officially, you know, all the religions are equal. We have the same religious status as any other religious organization, like Russian Orthodox Church. There is no, legally, formally, there is no preferences. Of course, informally, there is, you know, Russian Orthodox Church is the main church, and, you know, it has preferences. But, you know, we're doing our things, and there are some problems, but, you know, it's okay. It's manageable. It's just you need to know how to deal with all these things. Like, for example, like Akinchana Krishna, he's very expert. This place, oh my goodness, it has a special history, but, you know, and he has been through so many different troubles and tribulations, but somehow or other it's still going on despite of all these things. So many times people would come and say, that's it, enough, you have fine, you know, some enormous fine, you know, $50,000 you have to pay in a fine because this is illegal, that is illegal. And then somehow or other, it's just somehow or other going on. Still going on, and, you know, he's a brave man, one of the heroes of modern times. Sometimes we think that heroes are only in the past. No, we have heroes. He is a living hero here. No doubt about it. He is. You have to be here to preach in Russia. Anyone who preaches here has to have some certain, you know, some peculiar characteristics. So he's one of them. Troublemaker. Any other questions? Again, thank you very much for coming. I'm really happy that you came. Really hope that you will enhance your Shraddha, faith, your conviction. What you can see and feel in Russia, please do note it. That Krishna consciousness is very relevant to people. People need it. No matter who they are, Indians or Russians or whatever, it's a very relevant thing, and it's not a luxury, it's a bare necessity of life. We need to treat it as a necessity, as a urgent and bare necessity of life. As much as we need bread and rice, we also need Krishna consciousness to live meaningful life and to survive and to be happy in this world. So that's my final concluding message to all of you. Thank you very much.